recorded live.
All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here, along with Pastor William Fink, for another installation of Christogenos. And we've been doing a series on Ezekiel, the book of Ezekiel. And we're just about to head into Ezekiel chapter 14. And as I was just discussing with Bill, up to this point, before we started the show today, up to this point, the first 13 chapters have all been fire and brimstone directed against our people, true Israel, okay? Because we, as a nation, as a people, have been so disobedient, and we have played the whore with non-white races and played the whore with non-Israel religions and made our beds with the Jews and with all kinds of liberals and what have you, all of which the book of Ezekiel slams really hard. And that's really what the book of Ezekiel has been up to this point, except for the couple of occasions where Ezekiel has diverted his attention to the throne of Yahweh and discussed, you know, the various invisible beings, wheels within wheels within wheels, which could, you know, sounds like, could it be, Bill, our solar system within the galaxy, within the universe? could that be what Ezekiel was really seeing here?
Well, he was trying to draw a really complex picture, and I'd hate to speculate on exactly what he was seeing.
Yeah.
It was some kind of vehicle that was beyond his comprehension.
Right.
Or vessel that was beyond his comprehension that he witnessed and tried to describe in his own terms.
Yes.
Obviously, this was a complex vessel or vehicle that what was also quite full of Israel symbology
and the same
symbology we see in the book of Revelation and in the early books of the Bible.
Right, right. And so it's definitely not a spaceship. I mean, I think we can rule that out, that it's not
a spaceship. Well, it's not a spaceship the way we picture UFOs and flying saucers. No, it's
right.
Not anything like that.
Yes.
But it's beyond Ezekiel's comprehension, and we should understand for the current time that it's also beyond ours.
Yes.
I mean, I've said before that Christians should be, we shouldn't try to take the Bible and match it up to New Age speculation or New Age assertions. Christians should be comfortable with what confident with what we know and comfortable
right.
with what we don't know
yeah.
yet.
Yes. All we really have to know is to stay away from Jews and obey Yahweh's law, and we'll be fine. Okay?
Well, right. But we shouldn't be compelled by any means to try to take New Age beliefs and all these fantastic reports that we see in the world and find them in our Bible.
Yes, yes, yes. So, yeah, it's not worth speculating upon. And the day will come when we will know what it means. Okay. All right, let's continue into chapter 14 of Ezekiel. Then came certain of the elders of Israel, not of the Hottentots, not of the Watusis, not of the Chinese, certain elders of Israel to me and sat before me. And the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Son of man, these men have set up their idols in their heart and put the stumbling block of their iniquity before their face. Should I be inquired of at all by them? Okay.
Well, so, right. These are the same men that were bowing down on a porch of the temple and praying to the sun in the east, right?
Yes, yeah. So who are these people that should even inquire of Yahweh, these disobedient people? They have no business inquiring of Yahweh because of their disobedience. And I think it was also in Ezekiel, we found in Isaiah as well, that Yahweh does not hear the prayer of a sinner. He just doesn't, okay?
I look at this another way, too. Yeah, you know, in the chapters leading up to this one, what we see, the impending destruction of Jerusalem has already been forewarned.
Yes.
It's over for Jerusalem. Mm. The effulgence of Yahweh has already left the temple for good.
Yeah.
That happened in chapter 13, I think. And there's one notable verse in the chapters before this one, and that's Ezekiel 11:15. And that's, to me, important, and we're going to see why in the chapters which follow, in 14, 15, and 16 here. And that says, Son of man, thy brethren, even thy brethren, the men of thy kindred, and all the house of Israel, holy Now he's talking to Ezekiel.
Mm-hmm.
Are they to whom the inhabitant, in other words, they're not the inhabitants of Jerusalem. They are they who to whom the inhabitants of Jerusalem have said.
Yes.
In other words, the inhabitants of Jerusalem have said this to Ezekiel's brethren.
Right.
Get far from Yahweh, for unto us is this land given in possession.
Well, yeah, that's very similar to the claim that Edomites make in the book of Obadiah, also in Zechariah, and we'll find out later in Ezekiel, in the later chapters of Ezekiel, they say the same thing. And
right.
They're quoting the Edomites.
In Ezekiel 35 and 36.
Yes.
So what we see is that even if these elders of Israel are of Israel,
yes,
if they are Israelites,
yes,
they've already whored themselves out to the Canaanites and Edomites.
That's right.
And yes, and they've already sold themselves over, as we've seen in prior chapters of Ezekiel.
Yes. Excellent. Okay, verse 4. Therefore, speak to them and say to them, thus says Yahweh Elohim, every man of the house of Israel that sets up his idols in his heart and puts the stumbling block of his iniquity before his face and comes to the prophet, I, Yahweh, will answer him that comes according to the multitude of his idols. Well, I think probably your average Judeo-Christian would ask the question, well, what does all this idol worship business have to do with us today, modern Christians? It has everything to do with you. You're worshiping all these idols that the Jews are setting before your face and you don't even know it.
It's the same thing all over again.
Yes.
You know, Jerusalem was infiltrated and subverted in that day, just like London, Washington, and New York are today.
Mm-hmm.
And people are doing everything. They're falling all over themselves to get into these sporting events and movie theaters.
Right, right.
To worship the idols the Jews have set up.
Yes.
And it was no different then.
Yeah. Well,
it may have been a different vehicle, but it was the same scheme.
Right, right. And they don't believe in marriage. They believe in whoring around and having children out of wedlock. That's what these Canaanite people were doing, right?
Well, today we have a whole generation of two of young people who really stand aloof at marriage.
Right, right. And
they're
the churches do too.
Not having babies.
It's not just secular whites, Bill. It's the churches.
Yes.
That look the other way when marriage is ignored. So it's the same thing. And the greed, there's the worship of, you know, status conscious. It's totally Jewish. That's what these are the idols our people worship. Of course, they don't think of it as idol worship because there's not a little dollar, there's not a little voodoo doll that you stick a needle into. It's still idol worship. Okay, verse 5. That I may take the house of Israel in their own heart, because they are all estranged from me through their idols and through, of course, their false beliefs. Verse 6, therefore, say to the house of Israel, thus says Yahweh Elohim, repent. And is the New Testament any different? Repent and be saved, O house of Israel. Repent and turn yourselves from your idols and turn away your faces from all of your abominations. Our churches are absolutely full of abominations. They're lesbians. They're voodoo worshipers. They're abortionists. They look the other way. They're homosexuals. Our churches are full of these people. Verse 7. For every one of the house of Israel or the stranger that sojourns in Israel.
Now let me clarify that, because that word stranger,
mm-hmm,
there's several words. There's five or six different Hebrew words translated stranger.
Yeah.
And ger, number 1616 in Strong's Concordance,
yes,
is always positive and never negative.
Yes.
I haven't seen a negative use of that word. And a ger stranger is basically equivalent to the Greek xenos, which is a stranger. It's a person of another nation who has a right to expect a certain hospitality from your nation.
Right. He's a member of the same race to begin
with.
Well,
right. And in the biblical context, this is a fellow Adamite,
yes,
from another nation,
yes,
that can be a ger stranger.
Yeah. I've often thought about this. I haven't had a chance to check into the etymology of this word ger, G-E-R, but it seems to be the origin of the word German or German. Okay.
Well, I don't know. I don't really know if where the Latin Germanus came from.
Uh-huh.
German actually came from the Latin Germanus.
Right.
But you're on the right path because Germanus means authentic.
Okay. Yes. So it would be authentic, an authentic stranger, someone who is acceptable.
Well, there may well be a link there.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of Latin words that can be linked right to Hebrew.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. All right. So let's continue with verse 7. So this is the word stranger comes from the Hebrew word ger, which is a, you know, an acceptable stranger. For everyone of the house of Israel or of a stranger that sojourns in Israel, which separates himself from me and sets up his idols in his heart and puts the stumbling block of his iniquity before his face and comes to a prophet to inquire of him concerning me, I, Yahweh, will answer him by myself, and I will set my face against that man and will make him a sign and a proverb and will cut him off from the midst of my people, and you shall know that I am Yahweh. Okay? Again, more fire and brimstone, more blood and guts, vengeance from Yahweh himself. Verse 9. And if the prophet be deceived when he has spoken a thing, I, Yahweh, have deceived that prophet, and I will stretch out my hand upon him and will destroy him from the midst of my people, Israel. Okay? I don't think we can take this verse to saying that I caused this person to err, but once you have, what do you call it, evil in your heart, all of your, what's the old saying, all your devices go wrong? He will make sure that your devices go wrong. Verse 10, and they shall bear the punishment of their iniquity. The punishment of the prophet shall be even as the punishment of him that seeks to him.
Well, right, because a true prophet would not give
right
the counsel of Yahweh to a sinful man.
That's right. That's right. He's supposed to put him away. That's right. Verse 11, that the house of Israel may go no more astray from me, neither be polluted any more with all their transgressions. Did you have a chance to look up this word polluted? Because obviously this can have both a moral and a physical and genetic connotation, but that they may be my people and I may be their God. So, in other words, he wants us to get rid of our sinful nature so that we can be his people. We're not going to be his people if we have a sinful nature. That's all there is to it.
Now this word polluted, this is an interesting word. I have it on my English is from Hebrew list,
okay.
Right? Even though it came through Latin. It's the word tame. Or Tame,
mm-hmm.
It's T-A-M-E. I believe it's the word that from which on con, which means with, Tammany comes from.
Oh, I see. Very
okay. And it just means to be soiled, unclean, impure.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It can be spiritual or physical.
Or physical or even genetic. Yeah, it can be any.
Well, yes, of course, and we'll get to that in a little bit.
Yes. Okay. Verse 12. The word of Yahweh came again to me, saying, Son of man, when the land sins against me by trespassing grievously, and of course the land here means the people, because the land can't sin, so land is a metaphor for the people, by trespassing grievously, then will I stretch out my hand upon it, and will break the staff of the bread thereof, and will send famine upon it, and will cut off man and beast from it. So folks, considering how true Israel, American Israel, British Israel, the Canadian Israelites, the European Israelites, etc., are rebelling against Yahweh at the present time, we can expect a sore famine very, very soon. Verse 14, though these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job, were in it, they should but deliver their own souls by their righteousness. So you worry about your own soul. Make sure your righteousness and stop converting people to that false modern religion called Judeo-Christianity. Right?
Well right. I have a whole lot to say about this verse.
Okay.
And first, as we're going to see, you know, this verse is three times this warning's given.
Uh-huh.
And it also, we'll see it in a few verses, we can't even deliver, Noah, Daniel, and Job can't even deliver their own
right
daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we can this clearly demonstrates to us that no matter how pious one is or how favored by Yahweh one is,
yes,
as Noah and Job certainly were. One cannot do anything to save his own family from the wrath of Yahweh.
Yeah.
You know, you can only teach your kids to the best of your ability, and then they're on their own, and their lives are in their own hands.
Right.
But it's, you know, Yahweh knows what you've taught your children, and if you fulfilled your job, you know, their fate is theirs.
Yes.
And we have that warning three times in this chapter, as you'll see.
Okay.
Now this Daniel, I would like to talk about this Daniel, and not because, basically because a lot of commentators think they're real slick with this Daniel, and, I'd like to elucidate that.
Okay.
And it's arguable, and it is, if this is the Daniel... This Daniel in Ezekiel is the Daniel of the book of the Daniel the prophet.
Right.
And this is often argued in commentary, since Ezekiel is writing this circa 592 to 591 B.C.
Yeah, that's before Daniel was captive in Babylon.
Well, no. The book of Daniel the prophet, once we get past the introductory first channel, it describes events which took place beginning...
Before, oh, that's right, 607, thereabouts, right. Okay.
While most of the book of Daniel did take place after Ezekiel wrote,
right,
the beginning portion certainly took place and were contemporary with Ezekiel's life,
mm-hmm,
and happened just a few years before Ezekiel started writing.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't mean that Daniel's writings were recorded at that early time.
Right.
However... And we should believe the book of Daniel. Daniel must have already been widely known in Ezekiel's time,
mm-hmm,
having assumed, by 603 B.C., he assumed the office to which Nebuchadnezzar had appointed him, which was third in command of the kingdom.
Right.
Okay, but I'm going to go off on a little tangent here. Many mainstream scholars of the ancient Near East have another idea.
Okay.
And there is some credence to it, but I don't quite buy it, and I'll spell it out.
Okay.
There's another Daniel known to us from very ancient records. And the reasoning of many scholars is that Noah and Job were men from antiquity.
Yes.
And therefore, it seems plausible that the Daniel mentioned here was a different Daniel and also a man from antiquity. There's a story called The Tale of a Cat. Now, this is one word, it's a name, A-Q-H-A-T.
Okay.
The Tale of a Cat. I'll
okay.
call it. But it's not a
yeah,
cat,
right. A feline, right.
Right, it's a name. A copy of which is ascertained to have been made circa 1450 B.C., and that could be done through a comparison of certain Akkadian inscriptions, right? Well,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, this time Sumerian inscriptions, I'm sorry.
Right.
One of the figures in this story is a Daniel, who is the father of a cat,
okay,
who is portrayed as a wise and a good man and a judge. I've actually read this story.
Right.
But he is also portrayed as a Baal worshiper and as one who revered the pagan idol Anath. Now, Anath is she's called a Phoenician goddess, right? She's really a Canaanite goddess,
yeah,
that the Israelite Phoenicians also adopted.
Right.
She's also the Athena of the ancient Ionian Greek.
Right, I was going to say,
which begins the name Athens.
It sounds like Azanath with the first syllable removed.
Well right, but
Athena, goddess.
Anath is, yeah, you know, it's... Well, you understand how Hebrew was right to left and left to right.
Right.
And some people read it right to left and others
exactly.
left to right. And some
backwards.
People left inscriptions behind it were right to left, and subsequent generations would read them left to right.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of words between the Levant and the Mediterranean did get reversed.
Mm-hmm.
And even on the early Greek vases, the early Greek ceremonial vases that have been uncovered by archaeologists, the Greeks on those vases, they wrote
in both directions.
They wrote right to left,
uh-huh,
not left to right.
Okay.
That there are many inscriptions and paintings found where the writing on them is clearly right to left. It's
yes.
backwards, just like the Hebrews. And this is the earliest Greek writing.
Yeah.
So we can't go by the direction of the writing to judge the culture,
mm-hmm,
or the race. That can't be done. Now this, okay, so we've identified Anath with Athena, but
mm-hmm,
this Daniel, that this story is from ancient Ugarit, And therefore, mainstream scholars assume that Daniel was a Canaanite. But Daniel is called by the adjective Rapha man. That's not a Jamaican word, right?
Right.
Rapha man. It means a giant man.
Yeah.
Just like the Hebrew word Rapha.
Right.
But you know, that word, it was also used to mean tall.
Okay.
Not only after the giants, but it was
right.
a general adjective that meant tall. And we see that Benjamin even had a son named Rapha from Strong's Hebrew number 7498, who was mentioned in 1 Chronicles 8:2. And there's another Rapha mentioned at 1 Chronicles 8:37. So, first, I would contest the identification of the people of Ugar at this time as Canaanites.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that they were Syrians or you know, Aramean Syrians who were white and who were Semites.
Right.
And they were simply under Hittite rule. That's my personal belief.
Okay.
I don't know if I could prove that, but I don't think that the people of Ugarit were Canaanites.
Yeah.
And racially. But it seems to me that we don't have to necessarily take this as being a valid interpretation, because Daniel the prophet already had to have quite a reputation among the Israelites of the dispersion, and that this passage surely intends to mention him.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to explain the alternative interpretation, because it does appear in quite a few Bible notes and commentaries.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, but certainly Ezekiel wouldn't be praising a Chaldean or a Sumerian, even if he were an Aryan. You know,
well, right, but this Daniel is portrayed in these inscriptions as a great judge and an honorable man of antiquity. Now it's likely that we would believe that Ezekiel wouldn't portray him, but simply because he was an idolater.
Yeah.
You know, he was a pagan idolater.
Right. Okay. Well, let me repeat the entire verse 14. This is Ezekiel 14:14. Though these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job, were in it, they should deliver but their own souls by their righteousness, says Yahweh Elohim. So make sure that you are righteous in your own self, and you do the best you can with your family and friends and your nation, right? Verse 15, if I cause noisome beasts or your evil wild beasts to pass through the land, and they spoil it so that it be desolate, it's happening to America today, folks, that no man may pass through because of the beasts, though these three men were in it, as I live, says Yahweh Elohim, they shall deliver neither sons nor daughters. They only shall be delivered, but the land shall be desolate. So, and it's very often the case. You know, what's the old saying? The minister's daughter.
even the most pious men can only save their own tails.
Right. Verse 17. Or if I bring a sword upon the land and say, sword, go through the land so that I cut off man and beast from it. Of course, man being Adamites and beast being Che, probably. I don't know what the I didn't have a chance to look up the Hebrew word for beast here. Verse 18. Though these three men were in it as I live, says Yahweh Elohim, they shall deliver neither sons nor daughters, but they only shall be delivered themselves. So even those three.
Now, the word for beast here is behemoth.
Behemoth, okay.
And as Clifton pointed out in a series that recently every occurrence of behemoth where it's used metaphorically of people, every occurrence of beast where it's clearly used metaphorically of people comes from this word behemoth.
Okay. So it's the people, the non-whites among us. Right. Verse 19. Or if I send a pestilence into that land and pour out my fury upon it in blood to cut off from it man and beast, though Noah, Daniel, and Job were in it as I live. So even if they were among us, he would still cut us off.
Well, he's looking to cut off the men and the behemoth, right?
That's right. That's right. As I live, says Yahweh Elohim, they shall deliver neither son nor daughter, just like Sodom and Gomorrah here. They shall but deliver their own souls by their righteousness. For thus says Yahweh Elohim, how much more when I send my four sore judgments upon Jerusalem, the sword, the famine, the noisome beast, and the pestilence to cut it off from man and beast. Yet behold, therein shall be left a remnant that shall be brought forth, both sons and daughters. Then Jeremiah says exactly the same thing, a remnant. Behold, they shall come forth to you, and you shall see their way and their doings, and you shall be comforted concerning the evil that I have brought upon Jerusalem, even concerning all that I have brought upon it. Now, why should we be comforted? Well, because he's getting rid of the evil. Not just the evil, he's getting rid of the evil people. So I don't know where these modern Judeo-Christians get this idea of love the sinner, hate the sin. That's not in the Bible.
No, we're supposed to separate ourselves from the evil people and from the wrongdoers. That's in the New Testament. That's in 1 Corinthians chapter 5.
Uh-huh, right.
Put out the wrongdoers from among you.
Yes,
it does. It's very clear. That's Paul. Paul, that they always turn to for love and peace. And
right,
love.
Exactly.
That's Paul saying that.
That's right. That's right. We are not to make common cause with evildoers, folks. We are supposed to put them out from among us. Verse 23, and they shall comfort you when you see their ways and their doings, and you shall know that I have not done without cause all that I have done in it, says Yahweh Elohim. So,
well, when he's saying when the evil ones are judged, that should comfort
us. Yeah, and that should be comfort to us because it's not happening to us too, right? We can see his judgment right before our very eyes.
Well, right. The Christian hope is that the word is true, and if we're doing what is right, and that's only between us individually and Yahweh to judge, that we won't face this his wrath.
Right, yeah. And then another false teaching they have is that we shouldn't judge. We shouldn't judge at all. But that's taking that one verse totally out of context when the very next line clarifies and says, lest you be judged by the same standard by which you judge others, right? There's a big if, and they totally ignore the if. Verse 23, and they shall comfort you when you see their ways and their doings, and you shall know that I have not done without cause all that I have done in it. So you know that Yahweh's punishment, his judgment, is taking full effect when you see these things. Chapter 15, verse 1, and the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, son of man, what is the vine tree more than any tree or than a branch which is among the trees of the forest? Shall wood be taken thereof to do any work, or will men take a pin of it to hang any vessel thereon? Now, I think that one of the main problems, Bill, that we in Identity have, especially with the anti-seedliners, is their refusal to address the notion of tree, wood, branches, stumps as people.
Well, right. Trees and wood and branches and stumps are used consistently throughout probably 60-70% of the Bible books as people or more.
Right. And
as people.
Yeah, and it's quite possible that the metaphoric meaning as humans of all these tree symbols is more common than the literal usage. Okay, we'll find out.
Right. And I had these notes for the end of chapter 15, but let me go through them now.
Okay.
And not every mention of the vine in Scripture is negative. A lot of them are positive.
Right.
But this vine here in Ezekiel 15, which is a useless vine.
Okay.
I have to compare this because it's the same vine that Jeremiah was talking about in verse 21 of chapter 2.
Okay.
Yet I had planted thee a noble vine, wholly a right seed. How then art thou turned into the degenerate plant of a strange vine?
Right.
Unclean?
Right.
And we'll get the answer to that here in Ezekiel chapter 16.
Well, okay, let me just speculate because I didn't have a chance to prepare for today's show. Cain would by, you know, although Cain was degenerate from the beginning, but certainly Esau, Jacob's brother, turned into a totally degenerate vine.
By race mixing.
Yeah, and so did Canaan.
And in Ezekiel 16, we'll see that it's the Amorites and the Hittites who were accepted by the people of Jerusalem, and that's how it happened.
Right. Okay, so let me repeat verse 3. Shall wood be taken thereof to do any work, or will men take a pin of it to hang any vessel thereon? Behold, it is cast into the fire for fuel. Okay, this reminds us of Matthew chapter 13, the bundling of the tares and burning them up. The fire devours both ends of it, and the midst of it is burned, it is meat or useful, or is it useful for any work? Well, not for good work. That's for sure. Verse 5. Behold, when it was whole, it was meat for no work. Jews don't work.
Well,
when was
no,
the last time
they,
you saw a Jew actually doing work?
That their money is to work for them.
That's right.
That's their philosophy.
That's right. And they don't believe in farming. Their Talmud says that farming is the least respectable activity of all occupations, right? So they don't care to thank the farmers for putting food on their tables, right? They say that's such a mean, low occupation. No Jew would ever deem to be a farmer. Okay, that's their true attitude toward farming, and they hate physical labor. They don't do physical labor. And that was only prophesied of the Adamites in Genesis 3 and 4, right? It wasn't prophesied of the Jews, the Canaanites.
Right, Adam would eat by the sweat of his brow.
That's right.
It's very clear.
Yeah, and the Jews never have, okay? So because they're merchants, traffickers, usurers, and publicity agents. They do everything but physical labor. So we're talking about Jews here, folks. Behold, even when it was whole, it was no good for work. How much less shall it be good for any work when the fire has devoured it and it is burned? In other words, they will prove themselves to be so useless that Yahweh will simply burn them up. Verse 6. Therefore, thus says Yahweh Elohim, as the vine tree among the trees of the forest, which I have given to the fire for fuel, so will I give the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Now, I think there's another metaphor here with the vine, and that is we have vines tend to creep along the ground and up in the get involved in other people's business, right? In the business of all the trees of the forest, they simply won't leave the rest of the forest alone, and that's exactly how the Jews treat us. They always
wrap around all the other trees.
That's right. They wrap themselves around us and strangulate us in every possible way they can. Verse 7, and I will set my face against them. They shall go out from one fire, and another fire shall devour them. And you shall know that I am Yahweh when I set my face against them. Now, he did set his face against them once in 70 A.D., but there's a bigger face-off coming very soon, folks. Verse 8. And I will make the land desolate because they have committed a trespass.
Now, what trespass could they have committed? I'd like to read the rest of Jeremiah.
Okay.
2:21 and 22. And here we see that Jerusalem was, in Jeremiah, not a useless vine when it was planted, but
uh-huh.
It was a pleasant plant.
Yes.
Okay. And Jeremiah says that it turned into the degenerate plant of a strange vine.
Right.
And Yahweh asks, how did that happen? And verse 22 in Jeremiah chapter 2 says, for though thou wash thee with nitre and take thee much soap, yet thy iniquity is marked before me. And the only pollution that you can't wash off
yes.
is inside.
Right.
It's genetic pollution.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and certainly, you know, moral pollution, too. But with them, it's also genetic, yes. And on one, along the subject of vine, it occurs to me there's another vine plant that gardeners, I'm not much of a gardener, but, I've heard people complain about a vine called a wandering Jew, okay, which if you plant it in your garden, big mistake, because it spreads along the ground, takes over everything, and strangulates the rest of your garden, okay?
I'll have to look that one up.
Yeah, it's called a wandering Jew. It really is.
Whoever named that knew exactly what they were talking about.
That's right. That's right. Okay, chapter 16, verse 1. Again, the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, son of man, cause Jerusalem to know her abominations. Yeah, Pilgrim says, very true. Wandering Jew is ground cover. It takes over everything, right? Verse 3, and say, thus says Yahweh Elohim to Jerusalem, your birth and your nativity is of the land of Canaan. Your father was an Amorite, and your mother a Hittite. So, chapter 16 is beginning to clarify what's going on in chapter 15.
Well, to me, this clarifies, you know, here we are now. Let us compare with what Ezekiel said at 11:15, Son of Man, which I've mentioned before, Son of Man, my brethren, even my brethren, the men of thy kindred and all those of the house of Israel, wholly, mm-hmm. entirely, are they unto whom the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, whose fathers were Amorites and whose mothers were Hittites,
right.
have said, get you far from Yahweh, unto us this land is given in possession.
Yes.
It should be fully evident that the aliens infiltrated Jerusalem, began mixing with the people of
mm-hmm.
Judah, usurped their power for their own. This is the same pattern that the Canaanites have used to usurp every white nation.
Right.
This poetic description given by Ezekiel, and the verses which follow this, perfectly describes not only ancient Judah, but modern Britain and America as well.
Right. Yeah, and I was just getting ready to say that the house of Israel was taken into captivity because they had too much commerce going on, both or intercourse going on, sexual, political, economic, with the Canaanites in their territory, and obviously the house of Judah has the same problem. So both captivities of the house of Israel and the house of Judah are due to the idol worship, and you don't start practicing worshiping other people's idols unless you start having too much intercourse with them. All types of intercourse, of course. All right?
We're going to see that explicitly in these upcoming chapters in Ezekiel.
Okay, very good. Verse 4. And as for your nativity, in the day you were born, your navel was not cut, neither were you washed in water to supple you. You were not salted at all, nor swaddled at all. Okay, so a lot of symbolism here, but this sounds like the not accepted, the typical acceptable pattern for a child was not followed here. So we're still talking about non-Israelites here. No, I pitied you to do any of these to you, to have compassion upon you, but you were cast out in the open field to the loathing of your person in the day that you were born. Okay? Well, that's certainly true of Cain.
Well, I think he's talking about Israel here from the subsequent verses, but he's saying that he picked the lowliest of nations.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right.
You know, Israel was the smallest. Yeah, you know, the Hebrews, if you study the ancient inscriptions, Hebrew had become synonymous with slaves.
Yes.
I believe, and for that reason, a lot of anthropologists think that the word Abiru is not referring to a race, because it seems to be referring to a class.
Okay.
And what I would answer them with is this, that the Hebrews were slaves in Egypt. They were also subjects of the Hittites
mm-hmm.
in northern Mesopotamia,
okay.
a long time, and the word became synonymous with slave for that reason.
Okay. I forgot that the chapter 16, verse 2, is addressed to Son of Man, caused Jerusalem to know her abomination. And verse 3 just tangentially refers to the Amorites and Hittites among us. So this chapter is addressed to Israel.
Right.
Okay, verse 6, and when I passed by you and saw you polluted in your own blood, here we go with the pollution here, and this one can't be anything but genetic pollution here in verse 6, and saw you polluted in your own blood, I said to you when you were in your blood, live. Yea, I said to you when you were in your blood, live. I have caused you to multiply as the bud of the field, and you have increased and waxen great, and you are come to excellent ornaments. Your breasts are fashioned, and your hair is grown, whereas you were naked and bare. In other words, we have prospered tremendously under Yahweh. Verse 8. Now when I passed by you and looked upon you, behold, your time was the time of love, and I spread my skirt over you and covered your nakedness. Yea, I swore to you, and entered into a covenant with you, and you became mine. Verse 9. Then washed I you with water. Yea, I thoroughly washed away your blood from you, and I anointed you with oil, I clothed you also with embroidered work, and shod you with badger skin, and I girded you about with the fine linen, and I covered you with silk. Now, of course, Yahweh is saying these things exclusively to and about Israel. He's not talking, this way about any other people. Verse 11, I decked you also with ornaments and put bracelets upon your hands and a chain on your neck. And I put a jewel on your forehead and earrings, not in your forehead, on your forehead, not through our noses.
Well, yeah, right.
And earrings in your ears and a beautiful crown upon your head. Thus were you decked with gold and silver, and your raiment was of fine linen and silk and embroidered work. And, of course, look at Solomon. Probably the richest monarch, one of the richest in all of history. You did eat fine flour and honey and oil, and you were exceeding beautiful, and you did prosper into a kingdom.
I think that he's when he's talking here in verses 3 and 4 of the beginning of the sad shape that Israel was in, he's really talking from the time of the sojourn in Egypt.
Okay.
And the slavery in Egypt, that they're the lowest of all people. And even though the promises to the patriarchs were before that, he really didn't have any direct communion with the people until he pulled them out of slavery in Egypt.
Right. That's when we became a nation, when we left Egypt, yes. Okay, verse 14. And your renown went forth among the heathen for your beauty, for it was perfect through my comeliness, which I had put upon you, says Yahweh Elohim. Of course, he's talking about the white skin of the white race. Verse 15, but you did trust in your own beauty and played the harlot because of your renown and poured out your fornications on everyone that passed by his. It wasn't. It's happening again today, folks. The churches, the formerly white Christian churches, have played the harlot and is now race mixing and idol worshiping, and you name it, the churches are full of it.
And that's exactly what this is talking about.
Yes.
It's not talking about spiritual harlotry, and we'll see that as we proceed.
That's right. And of your garments you did take and decked your high places with diverse colors and played the harlot thereupon. The like thing shall not come, neither shall it be so. You have also taken your fair jewels of my gold and of my silver, which I had given you, and made to yourself images of men, and did commit whoredom with them, and took your embroidered garments and covered them, and you have set my oil and my incense before them, my meat also which I gave you, fine flour, oil, and honey, wherewith I fed you, you have even set it before them for a sweet savor, and thus it was. Of course, we're not to do that. We're not to sup with non-Israelites, folks, or at least non-Adamites. Okay, because those non-Adamites are not to be converted. They're not to be converted, folks. It's a waste of time, as the churches in South Africa should be fairly able to ascertain by now. Verse 20, moreover, you have taken your sons and your daughters, whom you have borne to me, and these have you sacrificed to them to be devoured.
Now, this is exactly what we do in modern times, sacrificing our sons and daughters to the whims of the international Jew.
That's right. It's called abortion.
Well, not only abortion, but how about the imperialistic wars?
Yes. Oh, that too. Absolutely.
And what about the race mixing? Yeah, this next verse, it is, all right, let me read it. Is this of thy whoredoms a small matter, that thou hast slain my children and delivered them to cause them to pass through the fire for them?
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people equate this with modern day abortion practices.
Right.
And that, I wouldn't disagree with that, okay?
Yeah, just and more than that, yes.
While I do disagree with a lot of what George Lanza says concerning the New Testament, I think he does a respectable job here in illuminating the Syriac manuscripts of the Old Testament, where sometimes the idioms were better understood, and showing that this phrase means race mixing.
Oh, okay.
And Clifton explains that in certain passages of using certain passages of Leviticus in Watchman's teaching letter number 124. Now either way, through abortion, through sending our sons off to the wars of imperialism, through the acceptance of race mixing.
Mm-hmm.
We are killing our children daily.
That's
and,
right.
And it's all a form of having them pass through the fire.
That's right. That's right. And of course, it's reminiscent of the Tophet of Carthage. The Tophet was the ritual area where children were actually tossed into the fire of Molech.
Right. People just threw their children away.
That's right.
And very
right
often,
into the fire.
Very often that was done to appease the pagan god.
That's right.
To appease Baal.
That's right.
Oh, we're surrounded by armies. They're taking our walls
yeah,
down.
Let's sacrifice
1,000 children,
yeah.
And maybe the gods will favor us.
Yeah, and that's not superstition. Of course it's superstition. Verse 21, I'll read it from the King James, that you have slain my children and delivered them to cause them to pass through the fire for them. Didn't Jesus say that he redeemed us and purchased us? We belong to him. Our children belong to him. Our children belong to Yahweh. We have no right to toss them away. We have no right to destroy. And obviously, we shouldn't be sending them off to these foreign wars that the Jews have arranged. Man, is there anything our people do that are doing right today, Bill? Are we doing anything right?
Well, people are so worried about their own bellies. They're so worried about the idea of Jewish success.
Right.
And whether or not they're going to
be
able to purchase the things that they want in life.
Right.
They're so worried about those things that they'll never have children.
Right.
And I had six kids. And I was, when I had when my daughter was born, I was only making about $12,000 a year, which wasn't much, even in 1983.
Yeah,
we couldn't afford a child, but we had one,
mm-hmm.
and 18 months later, we had another one, and 20 months later, we had another one.
Yeah, well, Yahweh provides. Yeah.
There was always a way that we got by,
yeah.
and we always made it, The more kids we had, the more I worked, and the more successful I was, and we could always afford it. But if we gauged whether or not to have children on whether we could afford it, we'd have never had children.
That's right.
That people are so worried about that today,
yeah.
And we just took what came to us.
But this verse is clearly saying that our children are His children. We can't do with them as we please. In fact, Yahweh wants more Israelites. Okay?
Well, today children would rather have big screen TVs. They don't want to have children.
Right.
They'd rather have plenty of DVDs yeah. to rent and parties to go to. They don't want children.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Yeah, they get in the way of all the furniture.
It's a very selfish,
right,
Jewish,
it is.
It's a Jewish world.
That's right. It is very Jewish. And Jews don't love their children. If you think that Jews love their children, they only love their children to the extent that they're eventually going to be anti-white and anti-Christian. That's it.
Well, to the Jew, children are only very often an economic investment.
Right. Right.
And that's it. They're an investment.
Yeah, and then they invest heavily in their children in going to college and keeping up with the Jewish traditions, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
To have them help join in the battle to destroy the white race.
Exactly. That's the only thing they take pride in is destroying the white race and Christianity, and they bring their children up accordingly. Yes. Verse 22, rather. And in all your abominations and your whoredoms, you have not remembered the days of your youth when you were naked and bare and were polluted in your blood. Okay, so you have totally forgotten everything I have done for you. Verse 23. And it came to pass, after all your wickedness, woe, woe to you, that you have also built to you an eminent place and have made you a high place in every street. And, of course, Chicago is a good example. Actually, in the heyday of Chicago, there were, like in the Roaring Twenties and even before, there were whorehouses everywhere, I mean, it was a rip-roaring town. I'm sure New York was as bad, if not worse. And, then the Depression settled things down for a while. And in the 40s and 50s, we returned to Christian morality for a while, right? But then the 60s happened, and the 60s, starting with the 60s, all of these whoredoms and abominations began with earnest. And it's a repetition of what we're reading here, verse 23.
Well, to sum it up that way, you know, I see the Civil War as something brought on upon us by the Rothschilds.
That's right.
As a payment for Andrew Jackson getting rid of the Jewish bank.
That's right, yeah.
Central
vengeance,
bank.
Jewish vengeance.
So they
yes.
turned around and brought us the Civil War. But even after the Civil War, we had a long time of relative peace, and the Rothschilds were busy with Frederick the Great and
yes.
And all that. Well, the I think that when we allowed our nation to become flooded with Jews in the 1880s,
yes.
and the height of the Gilded Age, that's when the Wall Street really gained its power over our government and began to consolidate it. And from that point on, that's when we had the shifts. That's when we had the First World War, Schofield, Bollinger.
Yes.
Everything snowballed from that point on.
Yes.
And I believe that's because we opened the doors to the devils in the 1880s.
Right.
And,
it was the devil
embraced the enemies of God.
Yeah. If you let a pack of wild dogs into your house, what do you expect them to do?
Well, right. And there were Jews here before that. And there were plenty of Jewish carpetbaggers and Jews in New York. But in the 1880s, we really opened the floodgates to
That's
Eastern
right.
Europeans and Southern Europeans, and many of them were Jews claiming
yes.
to be Poles, claiming to be Hungarians, claiming
right.
to be Sicilians, and the result is inevitable.
That's right. Yeah, that's why New York City has been, it started out as the cesspool for Jewish criminality.
Well,
you know,
I believe that's when New York City, that's when all the crime gangs started building up.
That's right.
That's when we got organized crime started to build up. That's when all those
yeah.
whorehouses and gambling dens started appearing all over the country.
Right, and burlesque, hey, you name it. You know, it all started in New York City, where the Jews began to settle.
That's when vaudeville started. That
right.
was the beginning of the Jewish takeover of our entertainment
industry. That's right. That's right. You know, so they took over our entertainment industry.
Really, in a way, they created our entertainment industry.
Yes, right, right. And they also, you know, then they stole the Edison's invention of the cinema. They stole that from him, okay? So there's just simply no – they always move into a country in order to take it over. They always
well,
do.
Well, right, but the entire history of our country has been – the struggle between Christians and Jews.
That's right.
But Christians haven't seen it.
They just,
not
yeah, they
for
just,
one minute.
They just don't know that. Their churches keep them in the dark about that. Absolutely, yes. Okay. So let's continue. Verse 23. And it came to pass after all your wickedness that you have also built to you an eminent place and have made you a high place in every street. You have built your high place at every head of the way. And today those high places would be banks. And have made your beauty to be abhorred, and have opened your feet to everyone that passed by, and multiplied your whoredoms.
Now that phrase, open thy feet, is spread your legs.
That's right.
You have spread your legs, and that's exactly what we do to all of the aliens who come into our lands today.
Yes.
And the mainstream so-called Christian churches, in concert with the Jewish mass media and the Jewish-controlled government, all help us into bed
yes.
with these aliens by giving them special privileges
yes.
and things that citizens can't even get.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've spread our legs to all the alien races today.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and you know, with the total propaganda coming in from the schools, probably even before kindergarten, it begins on television, that the typical secular white woman has the attitude that race mixing is beneficial for the planet, you know, because it fights racism. And so her sexuality has been politicized beyond repair, and she can't see that she's been totally brainwashed into
isn't total brainwashing, because that is the hatred of God's creation.
That's right.
Yahweh God is the author of race.
That's right.
If we weren't supposed to have races, distinct races,
yeah.
we would not have them.
That's right.
They would not be here.
Yeah.
There would be no white race if
That's
we
right.
weren't supposed to have one.
Exactly, because Yahweh, in fact, Yahweh is Are the white races the only race that Yahweh directly fathered, as Luke chapter 3 gives us, okay?
Well, anti-racism is the active endeavor to destroy the creation of God.
That's right. That's right. Verse 26, you have also committed fornication with the Egyptians, your neighbors, great of flesh, and have increased your whoredoms to provoke me to anger. Behold, therefore I have stretched out my hand over you and have diminished your ordinary food. Now, the word food here is added, and have diminished your ordinary. And so it must mean something more general than food. I don't know if you had the chance to look this verse up in your Septuagint.
I will in a second.
Yeah, and delivered you to the will of them that hate you. It's happening again today, folks. The people who hate us are ruling over us, the daughters of the Philistines, which are ashamed of your lewd way. I think this insertion of the word food is unwarranted.
Well, it doesn't. It's right, because the word that's translated ordinary,
yes,
it means an ordinance or a statute.
Okay.
And the Septuagint says, and if I stretch out my hand against thee, then I will abolish thy statutes and deliver thee up to the wills of them that hate me.
Yeah. Okay. So and have so it should say something like, and have diminished your ordinances or your rule, because obviously.
Well, when a nation is conquered, it's the law of the conqueror that prevails.
Right. Right. Okay. So that our ordinances are no longer in effect, but theirs are. So I think that's really what this verse is trying to say. And
well, just like today, our Christian ordinances are no longer in effect.
That's right.
The Jews' ordinances are.
Exactly.
And morality is a free-for-all.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, this insertion of the word food here is really unjustified. I mean, it's really a stretch to think of food as lawful ordinances. That's a real stretch. Verse 28. You have played the whore also with the Assyrians because you were insatiable. Yea, you have played the harlot with them, and yet could not be satisfied. And this is typical for our people. When we become very, very prosperous, we forget Yahweh. We assume that it's our own doing, you know, and the lawful Christian civilization that has come before is totally forgotten. We thank our own selves because we're such great business people and what have you, or great actors, that we earn all this money. But then we forget Yahweh and his laws, and then he has no choice but to take it away from us. And that's what's going to happen, folks. It's actually started happening already to America and Britain and all the other white nations. Yahweh is taking it away from us because why? Well, because we're, number one, deliberately throwing it away, giving it away to people who don't deserve it, and allowing them to rule over us. Verse 28 again. You have played the whore also with the Assyrians because you were insatiable. Yea, you have played the harlot with them and yet could not be satisfied. You have moreover multiplied your fornication in the land of Canaan to Chaldea, and yet you were not satisfied herewith. How weak is your heart, says Yahweh Elohim, seeing you do all these things, the work of an imperious, whorish woman. Is it clear, folks, that this entire chapter is about lewdness and of a nation not being true to its own race? Verse 31.
Well, along with the lewdness of the individuals in the nation.
Yes, yes. But this is, again, he already said he's only going to save a remnant. You know, the remnant who is not doing these things. Verse 31. In that you built your eminent place in the head of every way and make your high place in every street, and have not been as a harlot, in that you scorn hire, but as a wife that commits adultery, which takes strangers instead of her husband. Can it be any clearer, folks? Verse 33. They give gifts to all whores, but you give your gifts to all your lovers and hire them, that they may come to you on every side for you. And that's what we're doing. We're hiring. We're bringing these people in. We're paying these people to be here.
Right. That's exactly what we're doing.
That's right. Verse 34. Yeah,
usually the whore gets the gifts. If the people
yeah,
came,
right.
they should bring the gifts.
Yeah, right.
But they're coming and we're giving them the gifts.
That's right. That's right. 34. And the contrary is in you from other women in your whoredoms, whereas none follow you to commit whoredoms, and in that you give a reward, and no reward is given to you. Therefore, you are contrary.
That's foreign aid, trading privileges, open
right.
borders, all
yes.
these things we do today on behalf of these same people,
right.
the Canaanite
yes.
Jews inhabiting downtown Manhattan and the rest of our formerly great cities.
That's right. And our people can't see the reason why it's no longer working. It's because diversity is good, Bill.
But did the ancient Judahite, but did the ancient average Judahite in the street in ancient Jerusalem know that society was going downhill
yeah,
because of the Hittite and Edomite merchants that infiltrated
yeah,
the upper echelons of society?
They didn't quite perceive that, but they had to have known that they were disobeying Yahweh's laws. They had to have known
well,
that.
Well, right. But
yeah.
did the average German in 1914, 1916
yeah.
perceive that the entire German nobility in the second half of the 1800s intermarry with the Canaanites?
Yes.
And the Jewish merchants, and then Germany was destroyed.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the average German could not have seen that. It took Hitler to explain to them what happened.
And neither does the average American today
right.
understand why Rahm Emanuel is always whispering in Barack Obama's
That's
ear.
That's right. That's right. The Nahash is always whispering. Very good. Verse 35, wherefore, O harlot, hear the word of Yahweh. Thus says Yahweh Elohim, because your filthiness has poured out and your nakedness discovered through your whoredoms with your lovers and with all the idols of your abominations and by the blood of your children, which you did not give to, or which you did give to them. Behold, therefore, I will gather all your lovers with whom you have taken pleasure and all them you have loved with all them that you have hated. I will gather them around about against you and will discover your nakedness to them that they may see all your nakedness. And still,
now, how can we avoid this today?
Yeah.
It's the same exact thing that's happening to us today.
That's
how
right.
can we not be devoured by the Mexicans, the Negroes, the Indians, the Arabs, and the Chinese, whom we ourselves have elevated?
That's right.
This is exactly what we're going to see in Ezekiel 38
and 39. That's right. And every liberal in the country approves of all of this. And most of the Judeo-Christians approve of all of this as well. It's incredible, folks. It's absolutely incredible. Verse 38, and I will judge you as women that break wedlock shed blood and are judged.
Well, that's why Israel is the whore of Revelation.
That's right. Okay. And I will give you blood in fury and jealousy, and I will also give you into their hand, and they shall throw down your eminent place and shall break down your high place. Now, even though this is their religion, what we're doing is we're practicing their religion, the religion they want us to practice, but they're going to break these things down for us. Why? Well, because really and truly, deep inside their own bosoms, they hate us and want to destroy everything we're doing. So even though we're imitating them, they're still going to break us.
Every alien that comes into our country comes as a settler,
right.
a conqueror.
Yes.
They don't come as immigrants.
That's
we
right.
idiot liberal Americans look and see immigrant, and the Mexican has conqueror.
Right,
going
Aslan conqueror, exactly.
The Arab Muslim has conqueror going through
right.
his mind.
No doubt, no doubt. And probably to some extent the blacks, too. Certainly
well, the Negroes,
leaders.
Definitely, they're all about conquest.
Yeah.
If they can't fornicate with it or eat it,
yeah.
they destroy it.
Yeah, I think for blacks, it's more personal, like a black man wanting to rape a white woman and take stuff away from white men. I don't think they have the national consciousness.
Every Negro in prison right now,
mm-hmm.
and there's millions of them, there's about a million and a half of them,
uh-huh.
has running through his mind that when he gets out of prison, he's going to get his claws on a white woman.
Right.
Every single one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I know because I've seen them all.
Yeah. 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 They don't have the national consciousness that the Mexicans and the Arabs do. for them, it's a national invasion. For blacks, it's just taking advantage of whatever they can take advantage of. Yeah. Okay, verse 38. Let me just read. Yes, verse 38 again. And I will judge you as women that break wedlock and shed blood are judged, and I will give you blood in fury and jealousy, and I will also give you into their hand, and they
shall... We're there right now.
Yes, that's right. This is happening to America and Britain and all the other white countries in the world right now, especially South Africa. And shall throw down your eminent place and shall break down your high places. They shall strip you also of your clothes and shall take your fair jewels and leave you naked and bare. Folks, this is happening to the white race all over the planet.
Are we not practically naked and bare?
Yeah.
I mean, you're taking over half our the average household income is over half of it's eaten up in taxes.
Yeah.
And all of those taxes are going to these aliens or to the imperialistic wars of the Jews.
Right. That's right. Verse 40. They shall also bring up a company against you, Aslan, and they shall stone you with stone, the Arabs in Britain, Aslan here, and thrust you through with their swords.
Now,
is
this in addition to the current looting and pillaging and the next step
right.
for us in our present decline?
How many Aslan speeches say, hate Whitey, kill Whitey, do you have to hear before you start to believe them? Okay? And these liberals and Judeo-Christians simply think it's a joke.
Well, one skill I have that I really don't like to brag about, and I don't do it well, but I speak enough Spanish to convince a Spaniard or a Mexican that I could speak Spanish.
Yeah, okay.
When I want to.
Right.
And in prison, all the Mexicans knew that I potentially understood what they
right,
were saying.
Right, so they had to be careful what they said, yeah.
And every time I walked into a room full of Mexicans, it got real quiet.
Yeah, right. That's right. That's right. They do respect us if we respect ourselves.
Well, right. If they know that a white man is going to stand up for themselves and
yes.
doesn't fear them,
yeah.
they're going to leave you alone.
That's right. They will leave us alone. Exactly. Okay. Again, verse 40, they shall also bring up a company against you. And they shall stone you with stones and thrust you through with all their swords. And I'm reminded here of what happened during Hurricane Katrina. We had numerous incidents where, you know, liberal white people and Judeo-Christian white people took into their homes black refugees from New Orleans, people who had been living off of welfare for who knows how many decades, and, you know, opened their homes and brought these people in. And these guys would rape their daughters. They would kill the people that were housing them. They would, you know, in one instance, I guess when they set up a shelter in the Houston Astrodome, these blacks, they didn't want water. They wanted designer clothes. They wanted designer water, you know. This is how we've been treating these people, and look how they react.
They all got credit cards. They got
yeah,
debit cards with thousands of dollars on them, just handed out like
exactly,
candy.
Exactly. Well, now, when was the white race ever treated like that?
What
by
happened
another
to the
race?
Floods? The whites that were flooded out in Iowa.
Yeah, right. They didn't get the $10,000 credit card.
What about the floods? The recent floods in Nashville? We never even heard of.
Yeah, right. The media didn't even report that hardly. Amazing. Verse 41. And they shall burn your houses with fire and execute judgments upon you in the sight of many women. And I will cause you to cease from playing the harlot, and you also shall give no hire anymore. Well, how's he going to cause? He's going to eliminate the ones who are doing it. That's why there's always the remnant is always those people who are obedient to his laws. Verse 42. So will I make my fury toward you to rest, and my jealousy shall depart from you, and I will be quiet, and will be no more angry, until, of course, we start doing it again. Verse 43, because you have not remembered the days of your youth, but have fretted me in all these things, behold, therefore I also will recompense your way upon your head, says Yahweh Elohim, and you shall not commit this lewdness above all your abominations. Now, Bill, I have to ask you a question here with regard to, you know, the current crop of antinomian churches we have in the world today. How many times does Yahweh have to promise that he will punish us for our sins before they believe it.
Well, they're New Testament Christians.
Yeah, right.
They don't get, you know, they don't even read the Book of Revelation, where basically many of these same ideas are repeated.
Exactly. And that was written way, you know, like 60 years after the cross.
Well, Revelation's 9:20, and the men, rest of the men who did not repent from the works of their hand and their idolatries and fornications and pharmaceuticals and everything else, and all of those things, when you examine them, insist that we should still be following God's moral law,
yes,
the moral laws of Yahweh, and the message to the seven churches, and the fornication that was committed.
Right.
Therefore, I'll cast her upon a couch.
Yes.
And it's the same warnings over and over again in the Revelation, and they refuse to acknowledge it.
Yes, and Mark is quoting Leviticus 26:15, those who hate you will rule over you because we refuse to obey his laws.
Well, right, and yes. But the mainstream churches refuse to,
yes,
acknowledge that any of his laws are in effect, or,
yes,
or that have any effect on us whatsoever, and they refuse to acknowledge the message of the Revelation.
Right.
That they claim, oh, that book is sealed. Oh,
yeah,
it's sealed. We can't understand,
right,
that. That's,
yeah,
sealed.
Yeah. So we're not allowed to interpret it either. They admit they don't understand it, but therefore, you know, we can't be right in our interpretation. Well, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. In fact, the Catholic Church in Britain declared that the Book of Revelation can't be understood, and therefore we should disregard it.
Well, it can't be understood by a bunch of race-mixing faggots.
That's right.
They can't possibly understand it.
That's
pedophiles,
right,
can't possibly understand
That's
it.
That's right.
That's what they are.
Uh-huh. That's exactly what they are. And the average, here again, the average church-going Catholic, most of them look the other way, even though they know that all these things are wrong. They just look the other way. They should be leaving that church. Number one, if it can't be reformed, they should just plain leave it. But yet they put up with it. I can't understand it. I simply can't understand it.
Anybody that goes to those churches may as well just lay in the street on Fifth Avenue in New York and spread your legs to the devil.
That's
and,
right,
and cry, please rape me to death.
That's, right,
that's what they're doing to themselves.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Well, here's the nature of the delusion, which is really spelled out clearly in Ezekiel, that we white people believe, and especially it's especially true of white liberals and Judeo-Christians, okay, that by giving, by our own generosity, by giving all the things that we can give to these other races, that they will love us for that.
And they hate us.
Yeah,
when we give something, when a Negro receives something from us or a Mexican,
yeah,
receives something from us, they think whore. They think easy mark.
Right.
They see it as a sign of weakness.
Yeah,
if you give a Negro a meal, tomorrow your dollar will be his.
Yeah.
And half the stuff in your house will be,
yeah,
his.
Yeah. Yeah. He is simply on the take. And our people do not understand that they don't have the same mental equipment that we do. They do not have the built-in generosity that we do. And you're right. They consider it weakness.
Our law is the law written in our hearts. We live by the rule of law.
Yes.
And the rule of mercy and,
yes,
and giving and generosity.
And they don't.
They live by one rule. The law of the jungle.
Yeah, whatever they can get away with.
That's all they know.
That's right.
Every one of them is a roaming, devouring lion looking at what he could get his hands on.
Right, right.
How he could fill his belly. That's,
yes,
all the lion cares about, is how he's going to fill his belly that day.
That's right.
That's the Negro. That's the Mexican. And that's all of them. That's the Chinaman.
Right.
They're all the,
yeah,
same. I've seen it. I've watched these people all of my life. That's how they act.
Yeah.
Everything they have, they will consume today, and they'll worry about tomorrow when they're hungry tomorrow.
Right, yeah. Their societies just don't have that built-in sense of civilization that we do. They just don't have that, you know, and we can't give it to them. That's what our liberals and Judeo-Christians simply don't understand. You can't attitude, you know, it's the old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, you know, if he's not thirsty. But then when he turns out thirsty, he'll break into your house to get water, right?
Right, absolutely.
Yes, but you know, they won't consider your generosity as generosity. They will consider it as something to take advantage of.
It's weakness to them, yeah. and they're going to take advantage
right.
of it.
Right, and our people simply don't get that. They don't get that. And liberalism, and I think we did a show on the savage beast, what do you call it? Not the savage beast, but the innate, morality of the savage beast. And once you draw him up out of poverty, then he will become, not so violent anymore. Well, that's the hogwash. They become worse. They understand that they become better at the game of taking our things away from us.
Well, look at the insolence of these professional athletes.
Yes.
And look at the way they spend their money. That they're millionaires by the time they're 40, and they're broke by the time they're 50.
That's right. That's right. They simply don't have what it takes to build a society. They don't have what it takes to be a moral people. You can ask, every time I go to a different denomination that sends out missionaries, I ask them, well, what is the ultimate result of your missions to Africa and other third world countries? And after pressing them, they have to admit that they're very unsuccessful. Now, time after time after time, I've been told by missionaries or daughters or sons of missionaries who are familiar with how these things work and how these churches support missions in other countries. They say, well, once the white man leaves, the mission goes to hell.
Well, okay. Of course it does.
Yeah. It goes to hell.
They only understand the rule of law if there's a white man in the room with a gun.
That's right. Or with a Bible.
because the Bible has to come with a meal.
That's right. Exactly.
But when the rice is out, when there's no more rice, there's no more Bible. Yeah. They eat the missionary.
Well, because the missionary have clean classrooms. They got a free meal. Okay. The kids going to the classrooms are better dressed than the parents who sent them there, right? But when the white missionary leaves, it's over. Forget it. So much for Christianity, so much for civilization.
Well, the Jews really got us with quaint terms like emerging economies,
right.
Developing economies,
right.
The emerging world. Yeah, developing economies never develop.
Right, they don't.
Only white economies develop.
That's right.
And even the Chinese have all of our technology, and that's the only reason why they have an economy.
That's right.
With no white man, they have nothing.
That's right. That's right. And there's even a Japanese physicist who came out and said white people are the only creative race. the rest of us are always picking up the crumbs that they leave behind.
Well, right. And this emerging markets terminology in Wall Street is straight garbage.
Right.
Those markets never emerge.
No.
They only serve as giant sweatshops for the international Jew. That's where the Jew doesn't, that's what the Jew doesn't see coming.
Yes.
The white man is the only consumer.
Mm-hmm.
The Chinese people in their rice paddies, they don't care about computers and electronic gadgets.
Right.
They don't care about these designer jeans. They don't have a care for any of those things.
Just
you have a small minority
in
the cities,
yeah.
But that's a very small minority. It's an extreme. It's a pittance. The average person in South America doesn't care about these trinkets the Jew has to offer made in China. They don't care about these things. We consume the vast majority of the world's goods, and when we have nothing and can no longer consume, Babylon is sure as hell going to fall then.
Yes, right.
Because there aren't any consumers in India or in China that they can't sell each other the manufactured goods that they have no use for.
Yeah, right. Marx says, whites create, yellows imitate, browns ruin, blacks destroy, Jews manipulate.
Yeah,
of course,
well, that's probably pretty good.
And the Jews are in the business of investing in all of those colors against us. Very good. Okay, where were we? So we got off on this tangent here about missionaries and stuff. Okay, I believe I was at 43 or 44?
We might be at 44.
Okay. We only have about 5 or 6 minutes left, so let's just see how far. This is a long chapter, and I don't think we're going to get through this chapter, so let's just continue for a while here. 44, behold, everyone that uses proverbs shall use this proverb against you, saying, as is the mother, so is her daughter, okay?
Well, as was ancient Jerusalem, so is Christendom today.
That's right.
That's the way I read these verses.
That's right. Absolutely. We've become white trash again. Verse 45, you are your mother's daughter that loathes her husband, that's Yahweh, folks. And her children, the real children, who obey his law. And you are the sister of your sisters, which loathe their husbands. They're all watching, soap opera and following and lusting in the patterns of the soap operas on television, which loathe their husbands and their children. Your mother was a Hittite and your father an Amorite.
And the Canaanite Jew controls Christendom today.
Yes, absolutely.
The same people.
Okay, and your elder sister is Samaria, she and her daughters that dwell at your left hand, and your younger sister that dwells at your right hand is Sodom and her daughters.
Now let me explain this, because this is going to be lost on a lot of people. Jerusalem is the subject here.
Yes.
But this is a parable of three sisters.
Yes.
And let me say that this describes, well, it's describing the infiltration of Judah, of Jerusalem, by Canaanites.
Yes.
But here, Israel is Samaria, and the rest of Judah is Sodom. Mm-hmm. Remember that half of Jerusalem is in Benjamin,
yes,
which is a tribe of Israel. So Jerusalem really consists, that there were surely as many of Israel in Jerusalem as at this time as those of true Judah. However, Judah, it was considered the remnant of Judah, but most of Judah was taken off by the Assyrians, and practically all of Israel was taken off by the Assyrians.
Right.
So this parable draws a picture of three sisters, Israel, Judah, which is Sodom, described as Sodom, and Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I see this parable.
Okay, yeah, and then Jerusalem would be, and it's like today, New York City, okay? With all of the
it's a race-mixed city. There's no doubt.
Yeah,
there's no doubt. And this is what Jeremiah said in chapter 2,
mm-hmm,
in poetic language, and this is what Ezekiel's saying in chapter 16.
And it's fully what
Ezekiel indicated in that verse in chapter 11 that I quoted several times.
Right. So it's obviously telling us that the Amorites and Hittites, in other words, the Canaanites and Edomites, had made great inroads into Jerusalem's society, which should have remained racially segregated and separate from all those people. They did not, and therefore all these plagues have come upon the city of Jerusalem, leading to the deportations. Okay? You there?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, okay. It sounded like your phone hung up. So, yeah, and so again, it's happening to us today. And our so-called Christian people simply don't get this. They don't get this at all. I mean, this Bible is so foreign to these people that it might as well be, a fairy tale or a child's novel. They don't understand any of this. You know, they're actually practicing as these evil sisters. They're actually practicing these things, which Yahweh is condemning, and they don't get it. They think they're good Christians.
Right. It's crazy.
It's absolutely crazy.
They just won't pick up their books and read the book. How about from front to back?
Yeah.
They get these quaint little prayer guides.
Right.
And they read this verse today and that verse over there tomorrow, and they're totally unrelated. And
yeah,
they get this psychobabble that these discussions of these particular individual verses.
Right.
But they never see the story. Because
yeah,
they've only examined each tree in the forest or each word in
yeah
a book and never see them together in a chain to learn the story.
Right, yeah. No, they have no historical context, and they have no moral context anymore either.
No,
so,
but their religion may as well have been written by Freud.
That's right.
I mean, it practically was.
Yeah, that's
Freud's
right.
Brothers.
Exactly. Sigmund Freud
Schofield, Schofield and Bullinger. I mean, Cyrus Schofield was bought lock, stock, and barrel by the Jews.
That's right.
And he probably got his book directly from the Jews.
Right.
And who's to tell?
Yeah.
But and he was a fraud and a charlatan. And he probably, even if he wrote it himself, it's written from the perspective of charlatanry. I can't even pronounce the word.
Yes.
But Bullinger and that companion Bible are just as bad and probably even worse,
yes,
because Bullinger's companion Bible notes came straight from the Masorah.
Okay, really?
Straight from the mouths of the rabbis and plopped in Bullinger's laps.
Uh-huh.
That's where Bullinger got the notes from the companion Bible, straight from the Masorah.
Mm, the Masoretes, yeah, okay. Very good, very good. All right, so we have all of these inroads, Jewish inroads into Christianity, and as a result, Christianity has been more than Judaized. It has been idolatrized all over again, but it's very subtle, and the average Christian simply cannot see it as idolatry, but it is definitely idolatry, no doubt about it, okay? All right, so well, let's call it for this evening at verse 45, and we'll be picking up because we still have 63 verses total.
Right, and I still have quite a few notes in this chapter.
Yeah, so let's pick this up next week. Now, tomorrow I have another engagement in Bloomington, Illinois, so I won't be back in time to do the show.
Right, so, tomorrow I think I'm going to do the program by myself, and I'm going to have a lengthy discussion of the difference between adultery and fornication.
Okay.
Right from Scripture, from the meaning of the Hebrew words, the Greek words, because that's something that a lot of people have confused.
Yes, and then on Sunday I'm going to do a solo show. It's going to be Yahweh commands racial segregation of his people, Israel. It's going to be about racial the demands. The Bible makes demands upon us to racially segregate ourselves from non-whites. Absolutely does teach this, folks, and that's going to be the theme for my show on Sunday. And then I understand you and Sword Brethren are going to do a show on Sunday as well.
Well, we're going to. I don't know. Sword Brethren's schedule is very touchy.
Right.
These next few weeks, he's really looking for a career. He's a young man. He has no job. He has no career, and he's really been busting his butt to find viable employment.
Right.
And we all know, and he has a degree. I mean, he has a four-year
right.
degree from a renowned education. I mean, it's not from DeVry, right?
Yeah.
It's from a real university.
Right.
And he still
even
can't
though it is
find
a Jesuit
work.
University.
well, right. But I mean, in the street, that has some credentials.
Right.
Some credibility.
Well, I mean, that's the boat, the economic boat most white people are in. They have a degree, and they can't find a job.
Right. And,
yeah.
And he's really killing himself to find work. So I don't know how we're, you know, how consistent we're going to be.
Right.
But I'd really like to wrap up this series,
mm-hmm.
and we have to cover yet. We have to cover Nestor Webster, Communism in Germany, and then we have to get back to Mein Kampf, and I have a lot of passages noted where Hitler equates fully
yes.
international capitalism and international communism
right.
as being an entire two parts of the same Jewish vehicle.
Right.
And basically, and they're not Hitler's
excellent.
Words, but that's my assessment, and I want to show that, and that'll probably wrap that series up.
Yeah,
in demonstrating that, and we really have to finish that series after nine months of doing it, right?
Yeah. Okay, very good. So those are the shows lined up for the rest of the weekend. Thanks for listening, folks. This book of Ezekiel gets even better. It gets even better, folks. Fire, you think you heard fire and brimstone set? Oh, man, just wait. Just wait. Just wait till we talk about Gog and Magog, all right? Okay, so thanks, Bill, for joining me again this evening. Yahweh bless everybody.
Praise Yahweh.